Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know and that the mainstream media isn't reporting. My longtime listeners know I used to work as an attorney in Congress, and I was amazed at all the information that we had that was never conveyed to the American people. That's why I'm here on the air giving you the Inside Scoop. Today, I've got a very special guest. His name is David Callahan, and he's the author of Our Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Get Ahead. You remember all last week we explored the philosophies of red America and blue America, why conservatives think the way they do, why liberals think the way they do. I think David Callahan's point is really beyond partisanship, beyond left and right. Maybe. We'll hear from him. But the question is an important one. His thesis, and I should say that I saw David Callahan on C-SPAN and thought he was terrific giving a speech there, and in fact that's why I asked him to be on the show. He really has a very interesting thesis about why more Americans are doing wrong to get ahead, and I hope you'll want to join in the discussion. This should be a dialogue between myself and him and you. If you want to call in, I encourage you to do so. 877-57-SCOOP. Toll free, 877-57-SCOOP. Do you think that more Americans are doing wrong to get ahead? Do you think it's different from the way it was in the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, you name it? Are we doing more wrong? Is there more plagiarism? Is there more trying to steal money? And if so, what do you think's causing it? I hope you'll join in the discussion. If you call in early, you're more likely to be heard. Again, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can email me by sending an email to comment, C-O-M-M-E-N-T, at radioinsidescoop.com. David, I want to welcome you to my program. Thanks very much for coming on the Inside Scoop.
Great to be here.
Tell me this. You believe, do you not, that people are cheating more than they used to?
Well, let me just put out the obvious caveat, which is that cheating is not a new phenomenon. People have always cut corners to get ahead. The United States has always been a rough and tumble country where a lot of people break the rules to get career success or to get ahead financially. On the other hand, this stuff tends to go in cycles, and there are periods where greed and cutthroat competition really are very dominant traits in the culture. And then other periods where we're a little more kind of communitarian oriented.
Well, David, give me an example, if you will. Do you consider today a period where we're in the more cutthroat culture?
Well, I think the 80s and 90s, the last quarter century or so, has been really one of these go-go periods where, the focus has been on making money. We've had a very cutthroat values. Government has been government watchdogs have not been doing their job because government has been downsized, and I think that the result has been more people who hear the message that it's okay to do whatever it takes to make it, and that you should be out there judging your self-worth by your net worth.
Now, just to get a basis for comparison, when would you say we were in a more communitarian values time?
Well, during World War II and during the 50s and 60s, it was a very different period of American life. There was less inequality, more of a stronger middle class. Everybody kind of got wealthier together as the economy grew. And in the 80s and 90s have really been this sort of this period of intense new inequality where the country is becoming more and more divided between haves and have-nots. The people at the top, the haves, basically feel like they can often get away with doing whatever they want because they have the power and the clout. They can hire attorneys to get themselves off the hook.
People that listen to my show know we've talked at length about, for example, George W. Bush as very much a symbol of this, whether he was AWOL from the National Guard, whether it was Harkin Energy or Arbus or Arbusto, all these companies he had that totally failed. But apparently when you're very rich at the top, it doesn't matter if you fail.
Yeah, and sometimes there are exceptions to that. Martha Stewart recently was convicted. But the interesting thing about the Martha Stewart case is why did she lie to prosecutors to begin with?
It's a good
and
question.
I think that the reason she did is because she thought she could get away with it. And often that's a very rational calculation that a lot of these CEOs involved in the corporate scandals have thought, hey, nobody's going to come after us. These government lawyers aren't going to be able to touch us, you know. And so the haves cheat because they can get away with it, and the have-nots are often cheating because they think that the system is stacked against them.
Because the haves are cheating.
What's that?
The have-nots are cheating because they think the haves are cheating.
Right, and because they're often under a great deal of pressure, and they're very cynical, and, you know, when the financial screws are being turned, you know, they say, hey, why not rip off the cable television company and get free cable TV, or why not cheat on my taxes when I know the system is unfair, or why not lie to the, you know, the insurance company, or why not steal from the office because I just got my health benefits cut back, you know. So there's a lot of this kind of low level cheating throughout our society.
Let me throw out the phone numbers again, folks. I want to know if you think there's more cheating, and you can confess, it's okay. You just give maybe a first name and where you're from, and hey, you can even give a different first name if you don't want to. Are you cheating more? Are your coworkers cheating more? Your friends? Your neighbors? Are people doing it? And one of the most interesting things, and one of the reasons why I have David Callahan on my show, is his thesis that cheating largely grows when inequality grows. And I want to know if you agree with that. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. If you like the numbers, it's 877-577-2667. Or you can send me an email to comment, COMMENT, at radioinsidescoop.com. David, when you say cheating, you're not talking about bank robbery, right? You're talking about when otherwise law-abiding people break the little rules?
And also the big rules.
Okay.
I'm looking at people who, for the most part, wouldn't consider themselves lawbreakers, who couldn't imagine many of them going into a convenience store and stealing a candy bar. But, you know, when it comes to lying in the executive suite or making up false numbers at the office, or when it comes to filing a false income tax report, or when it comes to overbilling clients, you know, they're willing to do that.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that people that do this, and maybe most of us, I don't know, I'll wait to let my callers decide, but do you think that they think that they're doing wrong? I mean, when someone cheats on their taxes, do they say, you know what, I know I'm doing wrong and I feel bad about it, or is it everybody's doing it so it's not that big a deal kind of thing?
Often it's everybody's doing it so it's not that big of a deal. Taxes, classic example, you know, 80% of Americans think that other Americans are cheating on their taxes. A lot of rationalizations here about how fair the rules are. You know, a lot of people think that the rules aren't fair, and in fact, they're not.
I was just going to say, let's deal with the rationalization. Let's play devil's advocate. Let's talk from the cheater's perspective. Why shouldn't I cheat on my taxes? Everyone else is doing it. How do you respond to someone who says something like that?
Well, if everybody cheated on their taxes, we wouldn't have a government.
Right, right. People don't cheat in massive numbers, do they? I mean,
tax evasion is up significantly. We are now losing at least $250 billion a year annually.
Okay, but that's
tax evasion.
That's aggregate. I wonder. What's interesting to me is that Martha Stewart is probably going to prison. She's a multimillionaire for $50,000. So she wasn't cheating big time. She was cheating small time.
Right, and I think it had to do with that feeling of being invincible, feeling of, you know, you're untouchable because you're wealthy. And in this society, wealth often does translate into being untouchable because you have the fancy lawyers that can run circles around underpaid government prosecutors, and you have the political connections that can call off the dogs, and most of the time that works, but in Martha Stewart's case it didn't.
Now, you also talk about academic cheating. You talk about plagiarism being on the rise. Tell us about that.
Well, more students are cheating. To give one example, a 2002 survey found that 74% of high schoolers admitted cheating within the past year, up from
71%
a decade earlier.
Wait, three-quarters of all high school students admitted cheating? That's just the ones that admitted it.
Right, so it's a huge problem.
How do they define cheating for high school students? I have to admit, that's shocking to me that three-quarters would cheat.
Well, yeah, it's pretty shocking, but and
just cheating what? Looking on someone else's paper?
A variety of things. Looking at somebody else's paper, or, you know, plagiarizing from the internet.
See, I think that's extraordinary. I think that's way higher than when I was in high school, or maybe I was just naive in that I didn't cheat.
I mean, this is a trend that has been much commented upon, and it's not just in high school, it's also in universities. A lot of cheating in universities. Also, many of the surveys find about 3/4 of university students. And there's also cheating in graduate school, students cheating in medical school or in law school. And that's pretty troubling. And I think what it you know, there's a number of things driving this, but I think that the changes in the economy and in the culture have a lot to do with it. I mean, these kids are terrified that they're going to be left behind in this new global economy, you know, that the good jobs are harder to get and harder to keep. If you don't get into a brand name college, you know, maybe you're not going to be one of the winners. Maybe you're not going to be one of the people who really does well. The winners are getting paid so much more than ever before. You know, everybody wants to be join those ranks of winners, and if you don't get into a good college, your chances of doing so are much lower. And then, you know, you face a lot of insecurities and vulnerabilities. I mean, there's a lot of places, starter homes are cost $500,000. It's very hard for young people to replicate their parents' standard of living. And so I think that those insecurities definitely are part of what is going on here.
Do you think that any of this direction comes from the top? It's striking to me, and obviously when I see you on C-SPAN and I hear about your book, at the same time as you have a Bush administration covering up evidence of the torture, everyone says it's everyone else's fault. We have Bush saying, it's not my fault we didn't find weapons of mass destruction. It's not my fault that they didn't welcome us as liberators. All this sort of, you know, lie, and then no one can inspect us. I mean, do you think that people actually get their direction from the top in this way, or do you think that doesn't affect them?
I do think that the fish rots from the head down, that we do have trickle-down corruption in this country. You know, when you ask these young people why it is that they're willing to cheat, what a lot of them say is, hey, you know, that's the way the game is played. You know, look at the people who are at the top of our society, whether they're whether it's the president or whether it's the, you know, CEOs, you know, or whether it's top athletes that are juiced up on steroids.
Yep.
You know, there's the sense that cheating is the way that you often get ahead in this society, and that cheaters win.
Okay.
And it's very corrupting, which is why I think it's so important to go after the cheaters at the top. This is, you know, I feel sorry for Martha Stewart because she's one of the small fish in the grand scheme of things. But hey, it's really important to set an example of those people who are role models to make it clear that they can't get away with this kind of stuff.
You know, it's interesting when people are talking about whether Don Rumsfeld should resign or not. I actually think, I mean, not only it would be a good idea for him to resign, but it would be very good for the country to understand that when you allow this kind of thing to happen, there are consequences. And yet I think there's this unwillingness to admit a mistake. When George Bush is asked if he ever made a mistake, he hems and hollers like I'm doing now, and he can't think of a mistake. And to fire Rumsfeld would be a way of admitting he'd made a mistake. And yet I think that when presidents or anybody makes a mistake and admits it, comes clean, that the American people are more than willing to forgive.
Well, often we're too willing to forgive, and this is one of the themes that I take up in my book, is that this is a country that loves second chances, that there's a lot of people who do really bad things and get forgiven, you know, a year later. And they write a memoir, and they come out, they explain, you know, that they had a drug problem, or they explain that they, you know, lost control of the situation. I mean, take Jason Blair as an example.
I was just thinking of him.
Yeah, here's a guy who lied systematically in a couple dozen stories for the New York Times, and what's his punishment? Well, he lost his job, but he also got a six-figure book advance. I mean, these people cashing in left and right. I'm sure if Donald Rumsfeld was fired tomorrow, next week he would be meeting with publishers in New York and walking away with a $2 million book contract to tell about his adventures of being Secretary of Defense.
Okay, we have to go to a break, but when we come back, I want to take your calls. I want to know if you agree with David. Do you think that cheating really is on the rise in America, that more people are cheating? Or do you think that, hey, David's just taking this too seriously? Maybe it's okay to trim a little around the edges. After all, everyone's doing it. What do you think? And if it is a problem, What do you think we should do to stop it? These are tough questions, but David's a terrific guest. Call in 877-57-SCOOP. Toll free, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me at comment, C-O-M-M-E-N-T, at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back with your calls right after these messages.
Writers used to sacrifice for their art, subsisting on stale biscuits and cheap wine, letting their health go as they wrote day and night. No such suffering for Carol Matthews, though. She's a British writer of what is called edgy romantic comedy novels aimed at young contemporary women. And rather than sacrifice, she has simply sold her artistic self to Ford Motor Company. In the latest intrusion of corporate advertising into every nook and cranny of everyone's existence, Ford has paid a pile of money to Miss Matthews in exchange for her pledge literally to write the company's products into her romantic novels. It seems that Ford is eager to pitch its Fiesta car to 28 to 35-year-old women on their way up the career ladder. Apparently, this is the very demographic that Matthews' books reach. Chick lit, it's known in the biz. So Ford has become a literary character. For example, in a special short story written for the company, she drops in a reference to, quote, whizzing around Buckinghamshire in Imogene, a rather snazzy Ford Fiesta, complete with 6-CD changer, air conditioning, and thoroughly comfy seats. Art meets ad copy, and ad copy wins by a knockout. Matthews, who also is appearing in ads for Ford, says she's not troubled by this corporatization of her work. Quote, I've been very pleased with Ford in that they haven't put any constraints on my writing at all, she gushed. Well, good gollies, Ms. Matthews, I'm sure they won't, as long as you keep writing breathless copy like that. But what have you tried to, you know, test your corporate freedom by writing something like, whizzing around Buckinghamshire, my snazzy Ford Fiesta sputtered and died on me again, just as the 6-CD changer went on the fritz and spewed blue smoke in my face. This is Jim Hightower saying, who would buy a particular car just because some writer mentions it in a novel? And Ford wonders why it's falling behind Japanese car makers?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. And I think one thing that this government doesn't want to talk about is secrets. It's hiding things. It's what some would call cheating, basically trying to get away with something and hoping that no one finds out. It seemed to me, and I saw a lot of Rumsfeld's testimony this week, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, that he was more concerned with people taking digital photos of the torture than with the torture itself. I mean, sure, he condemned the torture, but he mentioned time and time again, how dare they allow digital cameras? How dare they photograph these things? We can't allow it. And I got a great guest here. His name is David Callahan, sort of a young philosopher of our time. He's written a book called The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Get Ahead. And in fact, I assume you can get that book at Amazon.com, David.
Yes, you can. It's also available in bookstores, and I have a website, cheatingculture.com.
So check that out. Really, he's very interesting to listen to. I hope you've enjoyed the first 15 minutes. My question is, David, do you think that, I mean, whether it's Don Rumsfeld or anyone else, people are more concerned with getting caught than with the acts to begin with?
I think that's right. You know, in looking at why there's been so much cheating, from more tax evasion to more corporate misconduct to more lawyers who are doing bad things to more doctors who are taking money from pharmaceutical companies, what I come back to again and again in my book is that watchdogs are not doing their job, and that in particular the government watchdogs that are supposed to be enforcing the rules and keeping things fair have so often been downsized, disarmed, and rendered toothless by this 20-year attack on government that has been waged by conservatives. And, the IRS is a classic example of this. You know, the IRS lost a third of its enforcement capacity during the 1990s at the same time that the a number of tax returns being filed was going up, and tax returns, many of them were becoming more complex. And the consequence is that the IRS has not been able to go after all the money outstanding, much of it owed by the super wealthy, who feel like, that they don't have to worry about the IRS because it's so ineffective at kind of figuring out different tax shelters and what have you. So weak government that has been systematically undermined by Republicans and conservatives, often who are getting their money from corporate interests, that weak government directly benefits, the super wealthy.
Well, let me throw out the phone numbers again. 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. If you want to call in and ask David some questions, he's really bringing in some terrific points. You know, it's very interesting when you bring up the IRS because, conservatives are often complaining about government spending. I presume, in fact, I don't have to presume, I know it's a fact, that for every dollar spent on the IRS, many more dollars come back. You spend more on enforcement, you get more money into the government. And so here's a case where we can actually make money with more government. Actually, more government spending turns around and makes more money, and yet conservatives are still opposed to it. And one of the things I remember very clearly when I worked as an attorney in Congress is we were discussing the SEC. And the question was, should the SEC lawyers, the people at the Securities Exchange Commission, the people who are supposed to watch these multi-million dollar corporations, these rich CEOs, and make sure they're not breaking securities laws. And we Democrats said that they should have pay parity. We basically said that the pay for SEC lawyers should be the same as the pay for non-SEC lawyers. In other words, that if the people prosecuting, and again, I agree with David Callahan, Martha Stewart was a small fish, but prosecuting the Enron execs like Ken Lay and Andrew Fastow and the others, that they should at least have the same resources that the criminal lawyers defending them have. I mean, the criminal lawyers can be paid millions because these people unlawfully made millions, and there's no equality. And so we suggested, really, it wasn't even that much of a raise for SEC lawyers, and the Republicans were steadfast against it. They did not want to put more cops on the beat. They wanted more cops on the beat where you're going into a ghetto to catch a poor kid doing drugs. But they didn't want more cops on the beat to catch the pinstripe criminals who were stealing money.
Well, that's one of the great ironies of the last decade or so, is that, we've been living in this draconian era of law and order, right? With 100,000 new cops on the street, a record number of people in prisons, $20 billion a year spent on the war on drugs. And yet, despite all of that new enforcement, there was very little money going to the police, the white collar crimes, and I have stories in my book about government prosecutors who are working on securities task forces investigating cases of insider trading, who had to go through tens of thousands of documents by themselves because they couldn't afford paralegals. And it's just, it's total hypocrisy. This is one of the things that makes ordinary Americans cynical about whether the rules are fair.
Well, David, let me read to you, if I could, an email from, I don't know if he's an ordinary American or not, but someone who has sort of a contrarian view. And we welcome all views on the Inside Scoop, agree or disagree. Again, the number is 877 877- 877-2667, which is 877-57-SCOOP. Shane from Tulsa, Oklahoma writes, is it possible that cheating is on the rise because more people are being caught? It seems to me that in this technology and information age, it is not only easier to cheat, but also easier to catch those who cheat. Do you agree with Shane?
Well, it kind of comes out to be a zero-sum game because it is easier to cheat and it is also easier to catch cheats. So I ended up discounting technology as a major driver of this cheating epidemic.
Why are you discounting it? I mean, Shane seems to think that maybe we're just catching more and so it looks like more cheating. It's an interesting argument.
For example, the research on academic dishonesty finds that more students are cheating today in a variety of ways, some of which are facilitated by technology, some of which are not. So you have students who are, you know, downloading papers from the internet, but also more students who are just engaged in that familiar form of cheating of, you know, looking over the other student's shoulder or something like that.
You know, when I went to school, we couldn't download papers from the internet. Maybe I'm showing my age. I'm still fairly young, but we couldn't do that. One of the things that always struck me is that if a professor sees a paper, all they have to do is put a few words in Google, you know, string them together, and boom, the guy's caught.
Right.
I would think that it's pretty easy if the professor would take a little time to catch those plagiarizers.
Right. I mean, that's a classic example. It's easier to plagiarize than ever before because you can just go on the internet and download stuff, but it's also easier to bust people. Whereas in the past, you know, if somebody actually went into the library and plagiarized from a journal article or something, it was much easier, much harder to catch them because, you know, you didn't have those electronic databases that were so easy to pull up.
Let's talk about where it's hard to catch people and where cheating is widespread. And that is, and I'm going to say it, don't hate me, folks. If you hate me, call in, 877-57-SCOOP. But that is with Napster. Now, I worked as a congressional counsel to Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts, and I can't tell you how many letters. We got hundreds of letters of people who wanted to save Napster, who were very angry at Congressman Frank, who is a liberal, but who said, you know what, I think you can't steal people's work of art. Just like you can't steal, anything else that belongs to them. If they want to put stuff on the internet, fine, no problem with that. But if people want to be paid for singing, for creating, you know, this wonderful stuff that they create, whether it's singing or comedy or whatever, you know, you got to pay for it. And what's striking to me is that, oh, I'm sure I'm in the minority here. I think 80-90% of Americans think Napster is a great idea and is very mad that the government shut it down.
Well, I'm also in that same minority. I think that stealing music over the internet is unfair to the artists who make that music. I mean, the idea that as a writer, I can sympathize with the artists. You know, the idea that people, instead of buying my book, are just going to download it over the internet and print it out.
you don't get any paid for all the work you did.
You don't get paid, and you know that most of these music pirates have. You know, justify their behavior by pointing to these big bad music companies.
They usually do. I can tell you, I read all those letters.
And they're bad.
They always blame the big music companies. Why isn't that a fair argument?
Because the artists get hurt at the same time. And even if you think that a company is big and it's bad, I don't think that that's a good enough reason to rip it off.
Well, actually, you can go to the artist and see, try to get artists that go around the big companies. Maybe that's the way to do it. Let me go to a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and David Callahan. What do you think about this? You agree with me or him or neither of us?
Well, this is Igor from Michigan.
Hello, Igor from Michigan. What do you think?
Well, I just stole his book, and I don't care.
I assume you're joking, Igor.
Well, yes, but when I get close to his book, I'll still steal it because I don't believe in the rules of this society. They insult my intelligence. They've insulted my intelligence since the Warren Commission. The government thinks they can get away with lying and cheating, so I'll get away with lying and cheating. The drug wars insult my intelligence.
Well, I guess I agree with you that the government is lying and cheating, but the question is when others around you are lying and cheating, should you stay sane? Should you stay moral? I'm going to throw it.
I am also a citizen of the universe, and my spiritual heart says that will tell me when I am cheating. So I will stay true to my heart, true to my spirituality, And that's how I will maintain my own personal morality and develop an ad hoc morality, which will transcend the corruption of this iniquitous society.
I think that's pretty tongue-in-cheek, but I'm going to give David Callan a chance to respond.
Well, the problem is that if everybody developed their own morality and took that kind of approach, we'd have anarchy. And, you know, we're all part of this, have to, you know, play by a social contract, which means that, you know, we agree to live by certain rules, and we don't necessarily like all those rules, but we live by the rules in order to have order and stability.
Okay,
and
but David, let me...
The social contract only works, though, if people feel like they get a meaningful say in how the rules are made.
Well, I was just going to get to that. Let me play devil's advocate, or in this case, Igor's advocate. Why should anyone be honest if everyone around them is cheating? I mean, that's just the heart of the question. I mean, the president's lying to us. Don Rumsfeld, everyone's pointing at everyone else. Ken Lay is stealing millions. Corporate executives are paid hundreds of millions of dollars while they lose money for their companies. You know, people are cheating on their taxes. Hey, why should I be good? Everyone else is being bad. How do you answer that?
Well, I think that you know, it's a tough question, and this is the reason my book really focuses in on a lot of the structural problems of our society, and really takes more of a structural approach in saying that the way to get a handle on cheating is to go after the people at the top who are breaking the rules and who are undermining the sense of legitimacy that many people, ordinary people, have, in the sense that there's no fair play in this society. And I do think that's the most important way to tackle the culture of cheating, as opposed through, you know, through individual action. On the other hand, you know, I think that all of us have a role to play in trying to create a society with less cheating, and I certainly wouldn't be very sympathetic to a corporate executive who came to me and said, well, you know, I was just cheating and lying to investors because all the other executives were lying to investors. I don't think that's a legitimate argument, nor do I think it's a legitimate argument if a friend comes to me and says he's cheating on his taxes because other people are cheating on their taxes. You know, I think that...
But what point... I mean, your book is called The Cheating Culture. And at some point, cheating becomes the culture. I want to tell a story. I remember, I was 10 years ago, I was in, maybe longer now, I was in Mexico for the first time. I'd never been there before. And I was invited there by some Mexicans that I had met. And I got there, and apparently I parked in the wrong place. I don't speak Spanish very well. And I remember my friend was parked in the wrong place, and he does speak Spanish because he was a Mexican friend. He was picking me up at the airport, and we came out and we saw a tow truck with his car literally starting to be suspended in the air. There was a Mexican policeman there. And I remember that my new friend, he bribed the cop the equivalent of 75 cents in pesos. And the cop smiled, ripped up the ticket, the tow truck put the car down, and we were on our way.
Right.
And I asked him about it, you know, I was really shocked to see this, and he said, that's just how it works in Mexico. It's no big deal. And at what point does the table flip, and those, I mean, there's all those songs, right? Billy Joel, Only the
right.
Good Die Young, or Nice
right.
Guys Finish Last. At what point are you a fool or an idiot if you don't cheat if everyone else is? I mean,
well, it depends where you are. You know, I look at lawyers and lawyers in corporate firms, young lawyers who realize that they're never going to be able to bill enough hours honestly. You know, that a lot of these law firms,
they push you. I know, I was a trial
you,
lawyer.
You know, they want you to work 2400 hours a year.
Yep.
And so what happens is all these lawyers, you know, associates of these law firms, they make up and pad their hours, and it's very common. So if you start work at a law firm and that's the way everybody else does it, and you're trying to, you know, play completely honestly, in fact, you're not playing by the real rules.
Plus,
the real rules are that you make up your hours.
Plus, if you're working for a big corporation, people think, well, a big corporation, hey, you know, they don't notice where their money's coming from either. Same thing when people bill to the Pentagon. We had a discussion just a couple days ago about contractors. And the Pentagon says, I got $1 million to spend, and the contractor knows that it only costs $100,000, but the Pentagon's got $1 million to spend, and they're not going to check on it, and so they overbill. Hey, Igor, you got any more?
Well, he insulted my spirituality. He said my spirituality leads to anarchy.
Well, maybe it does, Igor.
My spirituality transcends the rules of, say, this country or that country. It is the rules of the universe.
Igor,
it should lead to harmony.
I think this is all tongue-in-cheek, but I want to thank you for your call and bringing up some good points. David, any response to Igor there before we go to the next caller?
Well, I think that people need to, in terms of their spirituality and integrity, you know, a lot of people who end up cheating because everybody else is cheating end up feeling pretty bad about themselves and feel like they didn't have enough strength to really live a life of integrity and instead just, you know, chased after the dollar because it was the easy thing to do.
Fair enough. Let me go to another caller here. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and David Callahan. How are you? What's your first name and where are you from?
Hi, Mark. This is Brian from New Jersey.
Hey, Brian from New Jersey. What do you think about our discussion? Do you agree that cheating's on the rise?
Well, I'll agree with that, but I wanted to kind of talk about the Napster thing real quick.
Yeah. You think I'm wrong?
Well, I wouldn't say that you're wrong. I just think it's a difference of opinion. In my opinion, if these are, you know, true artists, how many artists have been throughout history starving artists and... you know, they can make plenty of money, in my opinion, touring and selling their T-shirts. If I want to go online and download one of their songs to see if their CD is good or not, let me do it.
What if they don't want you to? I mean, again, if an artist has a CD and they want to have a marketing technique, all they have to do is say, look, I got a great CD of 12 songs. Here's a song. You can download it free on the Internet and check out my CD. And if the artist wants to do it, I completely support it. Absolutely. That's the way it works. But what if the artist says, no, it's a great song. I know it's a great song. I wrote it. And I don't choose that marketing technique. Please don't steal my songs. Brian, do you still think you can steal it?
Well, personally, you're really not stealing the same quality song because when you download an MP3...
It's digital. It's the same quality, isn't it?
It's completely different. No, if you put that MP3 into a CD player inside of your car and you were to compare it to the actual CD, it's phenomenally different. That you have degraded that song by megabytes upon megabytes. A normal AUD file is about 45 to 60 megs, whereas an MP3 is about 3 megabytes. You're not retaining the same quality. In fact, you've changed the song almost entirely.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point. David, do you think it's fairer if you degrade the quality? It's not the same pure quality?
Well, again, I think it should be up to the artist in terms of if they want to, whether they want a degraded quality of their song floating around or not, you know. I think that this is the idea behind copyright, which is a concept that can be abused and taken too far. I know there's a lot of examples of excess and corporate bullying when it comes to copyright, but ultimately it's important that people get value out of their sweat and labor and creative energy.
Hey, Brian, I got to go to a break, but do you want to stick around till after the break?
I appreciate that, but I can't, Mark.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks very much for your call.
We're
going to a break. The number is, if you want to join in, it's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also just dial the numbers, 877-577-2667, or send me an email to comment, COMMENT, at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back with more of David Callahan and his book, The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Get Ahead, right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Talks continue between the Communication Workers of America and phone giant SBC. All 102,000 line maintenance, directory assistants, and other technical staff scattered throughout 13 states will stay on the job for the time being. The deadline to come to agreement on a new contract expired this weekend, but is being extended on a day-by-day basis, so long as talks between the two sides, with the assistance of federal mediation, remain active. The CWA says it'll also give 24 hours notice before taking any job action now. In related news, one of SBC's major competitors is cutting back on staff. MCI announced this week it'll lay off 7,500 people by the end of the year. That's 15% of the MCI workforce and an increase of 3,000 cuts over and above those previously planned for the year.
A regional office of the National Labor Relations Board dealt a blow to Wisconsin United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 with a ruling that could end union representation at the Jefferson Tyson plant. Workers there were on strike for nearly a year, ending last January after they accepted a four-year contract that differed little from the one that originally caused their walkout. According to the NLRB ruling, all 300 replacement workers hired during the strike must be made permanent. Now replacement workers are lobbying the NLRB to deauthorize the Tyson Union. Only the 300 replacement workers and about 200 called-back strikers will be allowed to vote. Therefore, union members will be outnumbered, and if Tyson wins, they most likely won't have to rehire union members or give them back pay.
A jobs boom may be just around the corner in Canada, but only for tattoo artists behind bars. It's related to a pilot program starting this year by the Correctional Service of Canada. It's going to put tattoo parlors in prisons around the country. The ultimate goal is to cut the hepatitis C epidemic in the prison system, which is blamed in large part on homemade ink jobs done by untrained cellmates. Six prisons in all will get tattoo parlors this year. Inmates will be trained to run them, but the government will hold censorship control over designs that glorify violence or gangs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most recent census identified nearly 44 million Americans without health insurance, but that's only half the story. A report released this month from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says nearly half of them, almost 20 million in all, have jobs but no benefits. This dispels the myth that uninsured must also mean unemployed. In 37 states and the District of Columbia, one in every 10 working adults has no health benefits. But the problem is worst in Texas, where one in four are uninsured.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. Our guest is David Callahan, author of The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Get Ahead. And we're talking about cheating, and a lot of you folks are defending it. It's small stuff, and it's very interesting to me that you are. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Call in. Tell us, do you think you're cheating more? Do you think your friends are cheating more? Why do you think they're doing it? 877-57-SCOOP. 877-577-2667. You know, one of the things we're talking about is sort of getting something for free on the internet, and one thing you do get free on the internet is this broadcast. Whether you get it from radiopower.org or radioinsidescoop.com, radiopower.org has a great selection of progressive talk radio, and they give it to you for free, but there are costs, and if you want to, maybe you feel bad about getting something for nothing, go ahead, make a donation. Go ahead and click on the internet and give them a donation. I'm getting a bunch of emails here. I guess people don't want to talk on the air as much about it, but I'm getting a bunch of emails here. And I got an email here from Sheila in Pittsburgh. And she writes two questions. I'll do them one at a time. One is, she says, is charging $20 for a CD cheating? I'm an artist, and I think so. Let me ask you that question before I get to her second one.
Well, if $20 is too much for a CD, people don't have to buy it. They could buy a used CD. They could take a CD out from the library. They could listen to music on the internet. They could just listen to the CDs they have. You know, a lot of people say $25 is too much for a hardcover book. Well, if they don't like how much a book costs in hardcover, then they should wait for the soft cover or you know, take the book out from the library. I don't think that, I mean, there's a lot of things that are very expensive.
Well, I think Sheila's point is, and she goes on to explain her email, is that her view is that it's the record industry, not the artist, that's getting all this extra profit and that it's price fixing and that sort of file swapping undercuts that. Is that an illegitimate argument?
Well, there's a lot of very high profit margin businesses out there and that charge a lot of money for what they're selling, and I don't think that is a legitimate argument for cheating. Take bicycle rentals. You know, people charge $20 a day to rent a bicycle that costs $600. I could rent a car for $30 a day. A car costs $15,000. Does that mean that I'm allowed to rip off a bike from the bike rental guy? I don't think so.
I think my response is that the way capitalism is supposed to work is that if things are overpriced, if artists are getting, you know, screwed over by large record companies, then they need to band together and compete and find, you know, cheaper record companies. There should be one record company that charges a little less, and all the artists go to that record company. And that's how capitalism works. And if there's price fixing, which is what Sheila uses, involved, well, we have laws against that. One of the greatest laws, in fact, in American history, and indeed it's the first one, I believe, in world history, it's called the Sherman Antitrust Act. It dates back to the late 1800s, and it's really a terrific law. I will agree that it hasn't been enforced as much as it should, but this is the law that took down Microsoft, took down AT&T. It basically says you can't have monopolies. That if you have monopolies, if you have price fixing, it's against the law. And I think the best way to go after record companies is to increase power to things like the SEC, the Justice Department, that does antitrust litigation, and basically tries to stop price fixing. I'm as against price fixing as you are, Sheila.
Well, one more point, which is I find it ironic that a lot of the music pirates out there who are stealing music over the internet and driving many artists crazy and having artists feel like they're losing their livelihood because of music piracy, that they cite the artists, you know, the interests of the artists to justify what they're doing. You know, I think it's for the artists to determine what their interests are, not for music pirates who are looking for easy rationalizations for free music to justify what the artists' interests are.
You know, it kind of reminds me of justifying invading Iraq because the Iraqi people want to be free. You know, I don't hear the Iraqi people say, you know, hey, we want to be free. I mean, I hear Chalabi, yeah, okay, he's an Iraqi exile who wants to be in power, and we put him in power. But we're going to free you whether you like it or not. That's what we tell the Iraqis. That's what we told the Vietnamese. And frankly, you don't understand how to be free. You have to be free in our way. We're going to give you our flag and our constitution, and you really don't understand what you want. But we're going to do it for your own good. We're doing it for you, folks. It's not about oil. It's not about it's about you. And I guess it's the same thing, saying it's all for the artist. Look, a lot of people do it, and I think I'm in the minority condemning it. And I got to tell you, it's hard not to. I mean, I had a friend get me a CD that he copied. I didn't copy it. Can I take that CD? You know, is it right? Everybody's doing it. It's a tough question. I have to admit it.
Well, one more point about this that I'd like to make, which is that, you know, the fact that there is so much distrust of the music industry out there and also the film industry and the entertainment industry, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the rising uneasiness about the power of corporate America
and
so many different facets.
Sure, and they are combining. I mean, we have this media consolidation. You have Michael Powell of the FCC encouraging Clear Channel to own all the radio stations. You got five record companies controlling 90% of all the music. I mean, you would agree with me, I assume, that antitrust laws need to be enforced more greatly so we don't have price-fixing monopolies, don't you? David, you don't agree with me?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Just making sure. If you don't, that's okay. I just wanted to find out if you agree or not. Let me give out the numbers again. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You know, what's interesting to me is that when we talk about cheating in America, is one of the differences, I think, between liberals and conservatives is conservatives seem to think that America can do no wrong, that America is better than the other countries, that Americans are more moral, that when we're in a chance where we have great power over people, we wouldn't torture. Why? Because we're Americans. And I actually think that the liberals have the better side of this argument. I think we follow the founders' vision, and I certainly revere the American Constitution. I don't think the founders of our Constitution, and again, totally apart from their slavery and mistreatment of women and all that kind of stuff, but just as a designing a system of government, I don't think they thought that Americans were any better or any worse than anyone else. Instead, they designed checks and balances. And that meant that every part of the government was watching every other part. You got a legislature watching the executive. Both are watched by the judiciary. All three of them are watched by a free press. You have the federal government can do things and state governments can do other things. And everybody's watching everyone. Everyone's jealous of their power. And frankly, I think that keeps us honest. In fact, one of the biggest problems I have with today's government is that you have a one party controlling just about every system. You have the executive, the president, you got both houses in Congress, you got the Supreme Court, all way controlled by Republicans, and now you have the media, the fourth estate, increasingly being bought up by Republicans, and you find everybody's hiding the ball. Nobody's at fault. Everyone wants to be secret. Everyone wants to get away with stuff. And so I think at the end of the day, it's exposure. It's exposure that keeps us honest. I've made the argument on this show many, many times that a law is not a law unless it's enforced. You can call it a law. You can believe in the law. You can read it in the books. But without enforcement, what meaning is the law? I mean, look, I've gone through stop signs. Uh-oh, am I admitting it? Am I going to get in trouble? I have. I haven't made a full and complete stop every time I've gone to a stop sign. If there was a cop there all the time, I probably would. So, you know, what do you think that enforcement – I mean, let me ask you, David. Are there statistics to show that enforcement really has dropped, or is that just can that be proven?
Well, I think what's happened in the last decade or two is that the law has increasingly become captured by special interests, and moneyed interests use their power to have the law applied selectively. So laws that are supposed to prevent pollution or penalize polluters are watered down. Laws that are supposed to that govern the use of illicit drugs have been beefed up.
Let's talk about that. I mean, it's always been striking to me that drug laws apply to the poor only. That it seems to me that if you are poor, and probably if you're black and you live in the ghetto and you're smoking crack, they're going to catch you. They're going to watch your street corners. But if you're rich and white and using cocaine, you're not going to get caught. I mean, George Bush will not say whether or not he did cocaine 30 years ago, and no one's even talking about this on the news at the same time as a third of our jails are full of nonviolent drug criminals. Now, how do we tell an average American don't do drugs, and you know, when the president apparently can do it and get away with it?
Well, law, it just underscores the way that law is really a vehicle for exercising class power, for lack of any more subtle terms, you know, which is that the people who have power shape laws that are very favorable to their interests, and the people who don't have power have laws imposed upon them. And in this phenomenon, I think has grown noticeably worse during the last decade or so. And you know, as you have moneyed interests, not just in Washington but in all the state capitals, wielding a tremendous amount of power, you see that there's a really unfair not only creation of laws but enforcement of laws. And this is a theme that runs through my book. I look at the various ways in which the corporate scandals could have been prevented by stronger laws, and that those laws were repeatedly blocked by moneyed interests, whether it's the accounting industry, which blocked efforts to beef up conflict of interest rules, or
okay, but
or
David,
what have you.
I guess I hear two sides to what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're being inconsistent. I'm saying it's really hard to say, you know, with the truth, which is that people at the top are cheating, that people, the very rich are cheating, stealing millions of dollars, they're getting away with it, enforcement's down, and then you're telling people who make less money or who are really suffering, well, don't cheat because it's wrong. How do we get out of this? The problem I think is clear. I think you lay it out very well, very strongly, very powerfully. What is the solution?
Well, I advocate the very strongly that we need to create a new social contract in the United States, that in order to have a society that operates smoothly and fairly, you have to have a social contract where people who play by the rules get ahead in life. People feel that whenever the rules are broken, everybody's going to be treated fairly, those who break the rules, whether they're rich or poor, and everybody gets a say in how the rules are made that govern their lives. And that's not the society we live in right now. There are a lot of people who play by the rules who don't get ahead, a lot of people who break the rules and end up on top. There's a lot of people who break the rules and get long mandatory minimum sentences, and other people who break the rules and get a slap on the wrist.
It's arbitrary.
And certainly there's not a feeling that we're all we all get a say in how the rules are made, because most people, if you ask them in polls, you know, who do they think are making the laws and the rules? It's, they don't think that they are. They think it's somebody else, special interests that are making the rules. So there's a tremendous amount of cynicism and unfairness, and we have to address that at a structural level, I think, to deal with the culture of cheating. We need to.
And the only way to do that is to elect new people in government? I mean, what how do we get out of this morass? I hear what you're saying as a matter of philosophy. I agree with you, David, I should say that. And yet, we seem to be so embedded in it. We have everything from Republicans gerrymandering Florida and Texas to make sure that even if those states become majority Democratic, they'll still have more seats in Congress. You got the Supreme Court, who didn't like how the American people voted in 2000, and so installed Bush as president in Florida. I mean, you got Ken Lay gives $1 million to the president and makes billions cheating people. You know, I guess I can understand the little guy saying, if they're doing it, why can't I take a CD from Napster?
You know what it is I think that you got to keep in mind that this kind of stuff goes in cycles. You know, 100 years ago, we had an America ruled by corporate trusts, an America where senators were elected by state legislatures that were captive of railroad and oil money. We had an America without a minimum wage, an America where child labor was still allowed.
So what stopped that cycle?
What stopped it was a resurgent progressive movement. There was the creation of a new progressive reform movement in the early part of the 20th century that fought to get a lot of the kinds of laws and reforms that we take for granted today. And I think that in order for us to get out of the place we're in now, where capital exercises so much power over American society, and ordinary people are so cynical, and many of them are very checked out. I think we need a more a new and empowered progressive citizens movement of reformers who are going to, you know,
put idealism back in people. Tell people we can be honest again. Tell Americans we do believe in an honest society, that we want to wipe out the corruption and really get rid of these people that are cheating, and it starts at the top. And if everyone, you know, it kind of reminds me of whether it's Happy Days Are Here Again with FDR or frankly Theodore Roosevelt. I think, or frankly the 60s, the ideals of we're going to get rid of this corrupt segregation and war in Vietnam. I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to young people really leading the way, I hope. And
I think many young people today are idealistic. And
look at Howard Dean's
values,
movement.
These idealistic values, they come and go in our society, and I think that they're in a coming phase right now, and there is a backlash to the period of the 80s and 90s that we've been in, where money has been so powerful and the greed and self-interest have motivated the lives of so many people. And you know, I think we're entering a more of a collective, a communitarian phase of life, where people are going to be reacting to some of the values that have been dominant in the last two decades. And you can see that in many places. I mean, whether it's a revived labor movement, which is much more activist, different kinds of grassroots movements, efforts to strengthen our democracy, living wage laws passed in 100 different cities to help, you know, ensure that people who work hard have a decent life.
And progressive radio talk shows like mine and like radiopower.org. David, it's really nice to end on an upbeat note. Much of what you said is pretty troubling, frankly, but it is nice to end on the hope, at least, and it's a hope that all of us can frankly make occur in a resurgence of a progressive movement, in a resurgence of idealism, of American that we can trust, of a government that we can trust again. And like I said, it's always good to end on a positive note. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us, David.
My pleasure.
I just want to close by saying that what's interesting to me most about what David Callahan was saying is not just the cheating culture, not just the all the you know, ways people are finding to cheat, but that the reasons he gives behind it. And what he basically talks about is the bling-bling culture. You know what it is. It strikes me that when conservatives, when Republicans say, oh, we want to give a tax cut, and it mostly goes to the wealthy, but that's okay. I always thought, wow, people are going to oppose that. It doesn't help them. But it seems that Americans all think they can be wealthy. all are going to be in the American dream. Everyone seems to believe they're in the top 1%, not realizing that the top 1% makes more than 300 grand a year. So everyone wants to be in the top 1%, and everyone believes in this bling-bling materialism. You know, these hip-hop artists that lose their ghetto, their street stuff, and end up with gold chains and everything. I think that I want to just emphasize what David said. I think that a resurgence of a progressive movement can really change people's ideals. Let's talk again, as Jack Kennedy did, and say, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. If our country is busy helping the poor, helping people, helping education, not just focused on torturing people in Iraq, then I think we can have this resurgence. And I'm really very thankful that David came on my show. Hey, tune in tomorrow. We got a great show. It's called You're Fired. It's our first Radio Inside Scoop reality show. And we're going to act like Donald Trump. You can fire one person in the Bush administration. Who is it and why? And we'll hear everyone do their best Donald Trump impression. So that's tomorrow, which on the Inside Scoop. And hey, if you like the Inside Scoop, do me a favor. Don't keep it a secret. This is Mark Levine signing off.